Hello, I'm Penina from Circle Care Services, and welcome to My BCBA Life. Circle Care Services is an ABA therapy agency, and we're all about giving BCBAs the support and community you're looking for. With this podcast, you're not on your own anymore. You're part of a BCBA community committed to making this world a better place to BCBA. Once this episode is complete, you'll be able to obtain a free CEU certificate for the clinical topic discussed. You'll need to confirm your attendance by taking note of the three surprise words I will drop throughout this episode. There is a link in the show notes below of a form that will ask you for your information and the surprise words that we need to generate your CEU certificate. Thank you, and let's get started.
Hi, Megan. Thank you for joining me on My BCBA Life. Super excited to have you here. You have so much to share with our listeners, so I'm excited to get started. If you could start with introducing yourself, who you are, and how you got into the BCBA fields.
Okay, so my name is Megan, and upon graduating with my undergrad, I'm pretty sure this is a common story for a lot of us, but we got an undergrad in psychology, weren't sure what we could do with it in the moment, weren't sure if we wanted to go back to school for anything, so a lot of us were RBTs, or even back when I started, I wasn't even an RBT. I was a BT. I was a technician. I can't remember the other title I had at one point, but I jumped into the field of behavior support for children with disabilities. I think I've officially became an RBT back in 2015. And then about 2 years into it, I was definitely being encouraged to go back to school because I had a clear passion for it. At least my BCBA said so. And when I did start school, I could definitely feel it as I got into learning more about the science and relating my experiences thus far to what I was learning in school. I graduated, unfortunately, during the pandemic, like smack dab May 2020. So it was a little bit challenging going into the world of trying to finish my field work during that time. But I was able to get it done and pass in 2021. And I have been a BCBA ever since.
That's amazing. It's amazing. You know, it's true. A lot of people do say, like, I was not planning on going for my BCBA, but I started with the field and I fell in love with it. But you said something so interesting. I'm just going to point it out because you said, I had a passion for at least my BCBA said so. And now that you're on the BCBA side of things, you just see the impact the BCBA could have on their therapist by making it a positive experience for them. And like you said, like she said so, like, you know, and you do. And you're able to like say, yeah, it's true. But it could be that she pointed it out to you and that's where you got started.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely am fortunate enough to have had very good BCBA models and leadership and supervisors during my entire journey. Fun fact, one of my fellow BCBAs that I work with right now was someone who supervised me for about 3 years prior to passing my exam. So it's so fun to go from kind of like supervisee to work bestie. It's been a really great experience.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So today we are talking about from the parent training perspective, advocating for kids. And you have a lot to say on that from personal experience. Why don't you share the listeners with how you feel personal about it? And I think it can make a very big difference to this conversation.
Okay. One fun fact about the whole BCBA journey is I became a mom right before I started going to school. And while I was in school, I was raising my son in his little baby toddler years. And just when I graduated with my master's in ABA, my son also received his autism diagnosis. So I became like a BCBA in training and a autism mom all in one summer, which was somewhat overwhelming with the pressure of trying to finish my fieldwork hours. But during that time, you know, I started to learn a lot about that side of interacting with individuals with autism, especially children with autism, you know, entering the autism mom sphere, so to speak, was a little challenging because I interacted with parents who had no history with ABA, but were really interested, had a history with ABA, and were singing all its praises for how it's really supported their families and their child. And I also dealt with a population who wasn't so hot about ABA. So it was a unique experience going through that. And I've been going through that for the last 5 years because my son is about to turn 8. So I have about 5 years experience of being an autism mom. And during that time, it's really given me a really strong perspective about what, you know, I go through personally, and recognizing what others are going through, and being able to really empathize with the parents that I work with through my own lived experiences. So my parent training can really come from a place of not just, you know, my education and work experience background with the population, but also just my experience as a parent. And going through that. So I definitely bring that to my parent trainings. And though I know it's not going to be something that every BCBA can draw upon, I definitely feel like it brings another valuable piece to interactions I have with my parents. I could probably go on and on unless you want to ask me any specific questions about it.
I was just like thinking we could start with like what could, because you jumped into the parent training piece and you mentioned like a big piece of empathy, which is huge, huge, huge. And you really could empathize in a more personal way, which is amazing. I'm curious if you could take us a step back even and just talk about like what the goals of parent training should be, especially you as a mom. Like what would a mom in this position look like, and what does she need through the parent training?
Well, every parent training is definitely unique to the parent that I'm interacting with. And yes, most oftentimes it's the mom, right? Because they're typically the primary nurturer for that child and are taking care of everything when it comes to their services. Most often I see with parents that I first interact with is they don't really understand autism at all, or they may have misconceptions about what autism is and how autism can be supported in their child. So I definitely have conversations with them right off the bat about what autism is, why we call it a spectrum, and how it presents, and really normalize being autistic, because I think that's definitely something we, even though there's been a lot of progress when it comes to destigmatization and, you know, acceptance over awareness, I still think there needs to be a lot for every parent that I interact with, normalizing being autistic, because it's not so much that there's all these deficits or that, there's anything wrong or that needs to be fixed with their child. They just need to be taught ways to support their child. And I really try to go into parent training with that in mind, that parents are going to learn skills to support their child and support themselves, not necessarily bring about all these changes to who they are. So that's one of the first things I talk about. I also am very upfront and candid about what ABA is. And there are often times where I go ahead and address like perspectives about ABA, because sometimes parents come into ABA not knowing a lot, but knowing the different attitudes about it. And I'm very honest about where those attitudes come from and what, at least in my practice, I am going to be doing when it comes to supporting them and their child. And I do think that's important, you know, if we're going to face and work together with those who do not see our field as a helpful field or even a scientific field, I do think it's helpful for us to understand those conversations and be part of those conversations and be honest about what we're doing to move forward as practitioners in this field. And that way we can have buy-in from parents in a very, very honest and open way. I also start parent training off with, you know, letting them know that there's no promises to be made about outcomes, right? It can be a fast process for them. It can be a slow process for them as far as like seeing things that they may want to see or learning things that they want to learn. But I definitely establish that, that there's no timeline, you know, and there's no promise of specific outcomes, so that they can themselves, as they go through this process, accept maybe that their child still isn't speaking or, you know, demonstrating some other skill. And I do find that helpful, I have a few parents whose children may not be progressing as fast when it comes to things like communication. And they've been able to reality check themselves a bit because we have those conversations all the time. So those are definitely things that I think are really important when you start out with parent training, and that I personally ensure that I do every single time I work with a new client.
That's amazing. I didn't want to interrupt you because you were talking so well, but I'm going to take you back a little bit, because one of the things you said was, I think, like, more important than person can maybe pick up on. But you were saying to have the open conversation specifically about the perspective that they have on ABA. And I think, like, there's a huge conversation of building rapport with parents and, you know, really becoming a team with them. But, you know, like, if you did come to a parent who in her head is super hesitant about ABA, heard things about it, and no one gave her clarity of where she heard it from and why that is, that anytime you suggest something, you're kind of like on the other side. So even if you get along with her, great, as soon as it comes to like a critical topic, she's just like, why would I try that? Like, the trust might not be there because she has this like baggage in her head about ABA. But if you have that open conversation of like, okay, listen, like, where are you at? Like, what's your perspective on this? Are you excited to start? Do you, you know, just to get that information, then you have so much clarity in how to approach things and how to explain things. So I think that's like such a key piece, like that, you know, like sometimes in parent training, you think like, oh, let's jump into the clinical, but like, this is something so subtle, but really could impact so much. My first surprise word is cup.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I definitely have found it's been helpful. Like my most recent assessment, when I sat down and I said, here, I'm going to go over what ABA is with you. And they're like, yeah, because we have no idea. And I definitely put it out there, you know, the attitudes towards ABA, both from those who benefit and those who feel there's no benefit. And then I usually use that to lead into speaking about what I am going to be doing in my practice with their child, so that they know the things that we will be doing as far as it when it comes to specific type of practices we use, you know, when we talk about like not using punishment, using least restrictive measures, and all the ways in which their child will be treated with dignity, so that they already know that I'm working towards really engaging with their children in a dignifying and ethical way that is definitely, hopefully, in their minds, far removed from some of the things that people think that ABA practitioners do engage in. And honestly, unfortunately, some actually do.
So take us like a little bit, I guess, further into the parent training. From your experience, what do you find parents need the most? Like in the parent training, what do you think they're either lacking, that they're either aware of or not aware of, that they need?
So some of the things I was thinking about when it comes to commonalities between parents that I work with, I spoke earlier about normalizing autism and breaking that down a bit, you know, discussing with them the things that may need supports and what the supports look like, and the things that may not really need supports and they don't need to worry about. I can tell you I've had a number of parents who, when I sit down and say, okay, so what are your biggest concerns for your child, or what are the things you want to see them doing? And many parents, first thing they talk about is stimming. Like they bring up how their child stims, whether it's hand flapping, rocking, scripting especially. And you know, they could be bringing it up because it's disruptive. They feel like it's disruptive to their child's life, right? They may be bringing it up because they understand the social stigmatization of engaging in that behavior in public. And so a lot of the time, one of the things I really feel parents need to understand is what stimming is and all the different ways it can look like and when we would actually need to intervene at all, if at all. Because a lot of the times parents have it stuck in their head that they don't want their kids scripting, or that scripting somehow will impede their ability to communicate effectively with family members, with peers, and other people in their community. So I definitely feel that that's something that needs to be talked more about. And not that I know any practitioners that push stimming reduction, but I do think that unless obviously it's dangerous to the individual, it should never be the focus of treatment at first, right? There's probably more pressing things at hand. And again, it a lot of the time it's the least of our worries. And when we really think about client dignity and supporting this child, you know, stemming is an important regulatory tool. And so if it's not really harming anything, we really shouldn't take away the supports they found for themselves. And maybe later on, we can address ways that are more helpful to them and are more pro-social, but otherwise. I definitely feel like that's something parents need to understand. Another thing that I feel like I discuss a lot with parents is the reality of their role in supporting their child. Like, a lot of parents come into ABA thinking we're going to do all this work and then their kid's going to have all these changes and we're good, right? And I sit down with them, I say, like, we're going to work on you learning these skills, but I think a lot of the time parents don't really understand what that means for them to be contingency managers and to carry on all the work that we've done when they're in home. So I do find a lot of the challenge I have with some parents is them working on those skills that we discuss at home. And so a lot of the time I'm really driving home their role in it and being really honest with, you know, the reality of how much work it is for them to be twice as, you know, attentive to their child, correcting themselves and attending to their own behavior way more than they ever have. And so that's something I definitely feel like I have to speak a lot about, maybe a few more times and with some parents. But I do think it's important to really let them know that they are carrying on a lot of this work, that it's not just them like understanding autism. It's understanding how to support them and actually engaging in that support on a regular basis. And I have parents who are honest with me whenever we have our parent trainings, they'll be like, I haven't done anything that we've talked about. And, you know, sometimes I'm just like, oh, that's frustrating, but at least they're honest, right? I definitely think that's an important thing to kind of drive home with parents, because some of them just think we're going to like fix situations and whatever. And then I'm trying to think if there's any other real big thing with parents. I do think something important when it comes to parent training is not being so strict about the format in which you're delivering it and sticking to maybe what you've planned to talk about. So many of my parent trainings, I feel like I'm an LMFT instead, and I'm just listening to them talk to me a lot about what they're going through. But I do feel like having unstructured parent trainings where they get to share with you what's going on with them, and then you can, you know, listen attentively to it and identify ways to then insert, you know, learning opportunities for them, right? To talk about function of behavior, to talk about antecedents and consequences, things like that. I feel like that works best for me. I used to have one of those parent training rubrics, and I'd be like, let's go through this rubric and do this like class type situation. But I really feel like the most effective way has been sitting and listening. And again, that empathy piece, right? The parents share all the things they're going through with me, and I feel like it really allows me to connect with them. And, you know, they listen to me and believe me more, and trust me more, when I do that. Sometimes a little overwhelming, because I feel like, you know, when they share some things and they expect me to say something, at first I would be like, I'm out of scope of practice, right? If I speak on anything. But now I'm really comfortable with saying, well, I am not a physician, so what I'm telling you is not medical advice, and I encourage you to speak with your doctor, but here's my experience with my son, maybe. So I'm no longer really afraid to have those moments and conversations. And but anyway, I do feel like approaching parent training that way is so helpful. For some parents, that instructional like way may be more helpful to them. But for the most part, I feel like you can establish really good connections with parents who are going to, again, buy in and trust you with their child when we engage in parent trainings this way. So
my second surprise word is shine. For sure, for sure. I love that. You know, like, you've come within your agenda, but really they're with the kids so much more, so much more. So hearing from them is probably very helpful for you as well to understand the kid better and their family situation based on what the parents are saying. But I had a question, because one of the things you were saying, like, it's super important. We can't underestimate the carryover skills that the parents need to, you know, like, how long are we there for versus how long are the parents are there for? But if we're really drilling in a skill, and it's really important for the parents to continue what we're doing, kind of thing. But it is very hard. Like, the parents have a lot of other things on their head and their focus is on so many things. And their child, of course, you know, and even with their child, they're focusing on so many things. And then there's their treatment plan. So what are ways that we can, like, help them do the, like, their role in an easier way? Like, what are some ways we can address? What are some things we can address, I guess?
So one of the things that I have found pretty helpful in getting the parents who seem the most overwhelmed to work on these things, and this is especially for the parents I have who have children who may have, like, pretty high behavior comparatively, right? Again, contributing to that overwhelm. So one of the things I have my parents do when we talk about strategies that they can apply to promote, like, change in behavior or behavior support, one of the things I tell them to is, I want you to practice these things just at home. When you're out in public, whatever, don't worry about it, because I understand that added piece of people perceiving you and managing things in a public space versus a private space just makes it even harder to be consistent with whatever thing we may be talking about when it comes to supporting your child. So a lot of the time I preface this, like, just do this at home. Try to work on just doing it in your safe space when you're not going to be judged by anybody. And you and your child are most comfortable, I'm going to assume, in the home. So that's one thing that I encourage parents to do when they're having a hard time working on things. And especially if they are parents who talk about frequently, you know, how they feel when their kid's engaging in behavior in public. And then another thing I try to do with them is when we're discussing, you know, all the different behaviors they have concerns about and all the ways in which we can support it, we identify one small thing, just one small thing to work on. Because a lot of the time, parents hit that roadblock of, I feel like I'm being consistent with this, but I'm not seeing any change, right? And then they fall off because they think it's not going to work. Even though we talk about how, you know, change is an overtime thing and it does take consistency and working through it despite, you know, extinction bursts and things like that. So a lot of the time I work with them to identify, like, one little thing that they, you know, apply a strategy to. You know, so maybe, like, don't reinforce this one little thing or this one little request, but all the other ones, whatever, so that they can practice that skill with one thing and maybe even see change in one thing. So, like, right now I have a parent who has a number of challenges with their child. In addition to them wanting to potty train, the child right now, despite it being so hot where we are, just only wants to wear long sleeves and long pants. Amongst all the other things in which they engage behavior about. And so I wrote up a protocol for them to just work on shirts and just work on this one thing with them. And don't worry about following through with, you know, things that they may see for other stuff. Just work on this one thing. And it was actually really successful. I was so proud of them when they applied it, because I saw the kid come into my clinic in a short sleeve shirt. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was really excited for them. And I have another parent too, who, you know, will tell to me, like, they want their, you know, 4-year-old, not 5, but they want their 4-year-old to do all these different things or not do all these different things. And usually when she tries to deliver those instructions, there's a lot of behavior response, right? And so we identified just one thing to establish the rule about and to follow through with and to really push through whatever behavior happens, and all the other things, just whatever, do whatever is comfortable for you. And that was not allowing, shoes to be on the feet when in home, just for jumping on the bed, because she didn't want him to wear shoes at all in the house. And we're like, okay, how about we just pick one thing in which we're going to follow through with this, and then you can slowly add in other contexts in which we follow through with it on, and then you can see how, like, it can work. But it's not overwhelming for you because you're not having to be on top of it for every single circumstance that happens throughout your day. So I have felt that really breaking down the things that they want to work on and finding, like, one small change they can work on so that they're not beating themselves up for not being consistent all day, every day, has been really helpful in them being able to work on the skills that we talk about and maintain them, and also see the change that they want to see. Because I have a lot of parents who are just like, I just feel like it's never going to get better. And I'm like, ooh, I really want you to believe me. So let's find one small thing we can make happen, hopefully relatively quickly, so that you can see that your child can do things. They can do big things. They can face aversive situations maybe and work through them with functional communication or build tolerance to stuff because you have to wear shoes when you go outside. I'm sorry, bud. So I have found that really helpful for my parents who are on the struggle bus, so to speak. And those are two big things I feel like are really helpful for them in applying those strategies we discuss at home.
Really cool. I've heard a few times from different BCBA, like give them something very small to do, which you mentioned. And for sure, like, you know, we can't expect them to do so much. They have a trillion and one things. As a mom, you know how many things you have to just keep track just to pack the kids' band, you know, for school. It's a lot. But one small thing, but you said something that I never heard someone say straight out. And I think it's so important that to show them success, choose something that's like a small success that won't take so much. Like it's not speaking, but find that like small piece that so the parents get that thrill of like, oh, wow, like by me being consistent and doing something, I can actually make change. So for the long term goals, it's hard to see and feel good and feel motivated because it takes time. But to create those short term goals, it's such a key piece. That's such an interesting thing to say. So I just wanted to highlight.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's been effective. So it's something in my toolkit that I'm definitely pulling out for parents who have a lot of big changes they want to make. And we're just going to do one tiny thing at a time. Because, yeah, I tell you what, even as a parent of an autistic individual myself, you know, I know so much and even I struggle with applying everything I know for everything every day with him, right? And you know, that's another thing I speak to them about. Like, I have all this background, education, experience, everything, and I still have a hard time being consistent, being on top of myself, promoting change in my son for everything that I may want to see. And so I think that allows them to feel a little bit better about how hard of a time they have. And usually I give them a lot of reinforcement to think, this, you know, considering that for myself, they're doing a really good job having none of the advantages I have. So, and I do think all those ways in which we can encourage them and find ways to reinforce them for what they're doing can be really helpful, right? We know reinforcement is so powerful. So,
totally. You know, what's probably the big difference between like a BCBA doing it and a mom doing it is like you said, like, even though you know so much, you're still having a hard time with your son. And when it comes to like someone who, you know, you live with your son, so you're not like when you're at work, you're focused to work. But you're a mom, you're busy and you're doing your thing and you have your own things on your head. And then there's like, you're like, yes, like we also have to take care of ourselves. And sometimes we're in a good mood and sometimes we're in a bad mood and sometimes we're tired and sometimes we're not focused. And it's impossible to be like super focused 24 hours a day, which is when we're with our children. So also to give that to those parents, the perspective, like maybe even choose focus hours because yes, like you need downtime also, and you can't be hyper-focused at all times because you're a human and it's okay that sometimes you're just going to need some downtime and you can't focus and you just need to rewind. And please, you need that. Like that's, you know, imagine being like a BCBA more focused 24 hours. It's not possible. Being a mom, not easy. You know, you'd like to have that perspective from their end of like, which is also, like you said, and I think we're able to get that from the fact that you're a BCBA and, you know, you probably have a harder time with your kid than any of your clients, I would guess. Is that true? Because you're there's mom.
Absolutely.
Right. You catch him in his good moments and bad moments, in your good moments, in your bad moments, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
And you know, that's another thing I try to remind parents, you know, I try to reality check them again and give them a lot of information when it comes to all the different things that control behavior. And one of the things I often share with parents is reminding them that, you know, the struggle you have like with your child versus like me interacting with your child is I don't have that history with them, right? I've known them a year, you know, or I just met them. So I don't have that history of interacting with them, controlling so much of my behavior or their behavior. And I look at mom and I say, your child has been with you since day one and employing their little behavioral strategies on you since day one, and you have that maternal draw and response to everything that they do, and you're trying to work against however old this kid is, 5 years, 7 years, history of, you know, doing things one way and suddenly doing something another way. So obviously it's going to be a struggle. And so, you know, I really, really try to put perspective for them so that, again, they can feel really confident and not feel this obligation to be perfect. Because I think all parents, whether you have an autistic child or a child with any other disability or no disability, I think all parents are hard on themselves at some point, right? Some more than others. And I think to try to alleviate that as much as possible for them, so that they do feel like they can do this, is an important part of my parent training. So
my third surprise word is number. I love it. And from all these things we mentioned, from parent training, from the goals, from what the parents need, from how you approach all that, is there anything you feel like is super important or that's like on your mind that you want to leave your listeners with?
You know, I know in school, we kind of learn all the different ways in which we can disseminate our science, right? We learn how and when we should be overly technical and when we shouldn't. And I definitely feel like if you don't have that balance, you should work towards finding that balance. Because obviously, if you go overly technical with a parent, they are not going to understand or maybe even be interested in what you say. And I really do encourage people to, when they're interacting with parents, to kind of like drop your shoulders and relax and, you know, obviously not be actual friends with them because we want to be professional, but really, you know, approach interacting with them in a friendly, personable way. I feel like if they're interacting probably with so many different service providers, clinicians, you name it, right? And I think if I can be the one that's not like overly serious, overly strict about maybe what we talk about because I'm billing for it, whatever, I know we're going to have qualitative conversation and learning opportunities in this time we spend together, but I know I can take time to be personable and to connect with them. So I would encourage everyone to do that because they're probably exhausted by interacting with all the other people they have to, and having one friendly, comfortable person to speak to when it comes to their kid, I think is really important.
Totally. I think that's such a key piece. And like in everything you said that I heard in the background of how like you really being super empathetic and just getting to the page of the parents. And I think that's really key. So as a parent yourself and really like in the field for quite a while, you share so much, and I really think there's so many takeaways besides for that last one, which I think is the kind of the background of everything you mentioned. So thank you so much, Megan, for being here today.